time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 2nd of November 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 2nd of November, Island Life was hosted by Christina Patterson.
This morning we're actually going to have a bit of a special because it's actually Postnatal Depression Awareness Week. And so what we're going to have coming up this week is, I'm going to broadcast something called The Black Dog, which will, some of you might be aware of. It's actually a book that's come out to describe what depression is like. And it's playing from YouTube, so it's someone reading that story. Following that, a clip that where some mothers got together, some Waiheke mothers got together and talked about their experience of postnatal depression. And that is actually showing as a film this week at the Waiheke Cinema, which you can see as a community film before the movie that you've gone to see. So I'll be playing that as well. And I was fortunate enough recently to go to the Perinatal Mental Health Symposium, which was a conference, a nationwide conference. And I interviewed a couple of people there. One was Al Kabotha, who is a psychiatrist for Waitemata Maternal Mental Health. And she talks about values and how they can help someone to recover from depression. And in fact, I think values help, you know, understanding your own values helps you in a multiple, a range of ways. But so we're doing that. And also I spoke to Brendan Smith, who is from the Father and Child Trust Foundation, and he is the community support worker, I think he's called, for Auckland, and he talks and support. He talks to fathers who are going through anything where they need support, and he runs a support group as well. But so he's going to talk about what he's doing and what's available for dads, because postnatal depression doesn't just affect mums. Obviously, it affects their child, affects their the partner, and their wider family and friends. So I'm just about to play, I had a black dog, his name was Depression, or I think it's called just Black Dog, the book. It's put out by the World Health Organization, and I'm just going to play it for you now.
I had a black dog, his name was Depression. Whenever the black dog made an appearance, I felt empty and life just seemed to slow down. He could surprise me with a visit for no reason or occasion. The black dog made me look and feel older than my years. When the rest of the world seemed to be enjoying life, I could only see it through the black dog. Activities that usually brought me pleasure suddenly ceased to. He liked to ruin my appetite. He chewed up my memory and my ability to concentrate. Doing anything or going anywhere with the black dog required superhuman strength. At social occasions, he'd sniff out what confidence I had and chase it away. My biggest fear was being found out. I worried that people would judge me. Because of the shame and stigma of the black dog, I was constantly worried that I'd be found out. So I invested vast amounts of energy into covering him up. Keeping up an emotional lie is exhausting. Black dog could make me think and say negative things. He could make me irritable and difficult to be around. He would take my love and bury my intimacy. He loved nothing more than to wake me up with highly repetitive and negative thinking. He also liked to remind me how exhausted I was going to be the next day. Having a black dog in your life isn't so much about feeling a bit down, sad or blue. At its worst, it's about being devoid of feeling altogether. As I got older, the black dog got bigger and he started hanging around all the time. I'd chase him off with whatever I thought might send him running. But more often than not, he'd come out on top. Going down became easier than getting up again. So I became rather good at self-medication, which never really helped. Eventually, I felt totally isolated from everything and everyone. The black dog had finally succeeded in hijacking my life. When you lose all joy in life, you can begin to question what the point of it is. Thankfully, this was the time that I sought professional help. This was my first step towards recovery and a major turning point in my life. I learned that it doesn't matter who you are, the black dog affects millions and millions of people. It is an equal opportunity mongrel. I also learned that there was no silver bullet or magic pill. Medication can help some, and others might need a different approach altogether. I also learned that being emotionally genuine and authentic to those who are close to you can be an absolute game changer. Most importantly, I learned not to be afraid of the black dog, and I taught him a few new tricks of my own. The more tired and stressed you are, the louder he barks, so it's important to learn how to quiet your mind. It's been clinically proven that regular exercise can be as effective for treating mild to moderate depression as antidepressants, so go for a walk or a run and leave the mutt behind. Keep a mood journal. Getting your thoughts on paper can be cathartic and often insightful. Also, keep track of the things that you have to be grateful for. The most important thing to remember is that no matter how bad it gets, if you take the right steps, talk to the right people, black dog days can and will pass. I wouldn't say that I'm grateful for the black dog, but he's been an incredible teacher. He forced me to reevaluate and simplify my life. I learned that rather than running away from my problems, it's better to embrace them. The black dog may always be part of my life, but he'll never be the beast that he was. We have an understanding. I've learned through knowledge, patience, discipline and humour, the worst black dog can be made to heal. If you're in difficulty, never be afraid to ask for help. There is absolutely no shame in doing so. The only shame is missing out on life.
So that was the black dog, and hopefully that's given you a little bit of understanding of perhaps what people are going through when they have depression. And for those of you who suffer from depression, that will probably sound familiar. So the next clip I'm going to play now is actually a group of mothers on Waiheke Island talking about their experience of postnatal depression.
Suicide is the most common cause of death for pregnant women and women in the first year after childbirth. It's not high blood pressure, it's not diabetes, it's not, the other things that we worry about. It's suicide, and yet it is the thing that we screen for the worst.
My midwife at the time said to me that if I didn't stop crying after day 7, that she would be wanting me to go to the doctor. So on day 7, I made myself stop crying so that I didn't have to go to the doctor. And I just forced myself, literally, because I was in tears every single day. So I knew that there was something wrong, but it took me 9 months to actually recognise that I had to do something about it. By that time, my energy was extremely low. I could barely get off the couch. It took all my energy just to look after Nathan, my son.
What alerted me to the fact there was something wrong was that I wasn't sleeping, and my baby was. He was sleeping through from 3 months old, and I had chronic insomnia, and I was just lying awake and kind of feeling anxious all the time, and he was absolutely fine. And it was just like there was a switch had gone off in my brain, and it was quite hard to explain, really. But I kind of didn't really realise that there was anything wrong. I didn't feel 100%, and I'd go to coffee groups with other mums, and I didn't feel the way they felt. I felt sort of quite different. I felt like I was struggling, and they seemed to have everything together, and I just didn't feel that way at all, you know. And everything seemed hard. Mm. I mean, all my energy went into looking after my son, and I was just exhausted. I wasn't sleeping. And so eventually, after about, I think, 6 months, this kind of went on. And I went to my doctor, and I told her what was going on and how I was feeling. And she initially prescribed me sleeping tablets. And that didn't work. And so I just kind of went in this downward spiral, really. And I was just struggling to cope and to manage the day-to-day living and everything. And then in desperation, because I was just feeling so awful, I finally went back and saw another doctor, and she said, "Oh, you've got postnatal depression." I was just like, "Oh." So, and I mean, I knew what postnatal depression was. I was educated about it. I didn't have the risk factors. But I think sometimes when you're in that cycle, you don't actually recognise it yourself. You just know that there's something really, really wrong. And so it was just great to get that clarity or that this is what the problem is. And so I did go on antidepressants for a little while, and that did help quite a lot. It meant that I was able to sleep, so obviously I had more energy. And I was living in West Auckland at the time, and there was a really good postnatal support group out there. So I went to that and just became really aware of looking after myself and, you know, taking time out and all that sort of stuff. So that's what I did.
If I had been told, if I'd been made aware that, one, I was at risk, and I kind of knew it anyway, but if someone had actually recognised that, if they'd also told me medication is not going to help you on its own, because medication doesn't help you on its own. There's no way that you can get better long term if all you do is treat it with medication. It just doesn't work like that. So because I didn't have full information about what does it mean, what could be going on, what do the symptoms look like, here's what I think is going on, and this is what you can do to recover, if I'd had all of that, I don't think that it would have been such a hard road for me.
It would have helped if, when I first went to the doctor, if she had have recognised what was going on rather than just giving me sleeping tablets, because then it was another 3 or 4 months before I really got the help that I needed. So, and I mean, I was doing lots of research online initially about insomnia and stuff, thinking that was the problem, and not actually recognising that it was the postnatal depression which was causing the insomnia. Mm. And I did the Edinburgh scale as well. I found that online and did the checklist, and I recognised from that I was depressed as well. So I just became aware, and, you know, with the help of some antidepressants for a little while, of you know, looking after myself and nurturing myself and not just pouring all my energy into this baby, which is, you know, the natural thing to do as mothers. But yeah, it's a big learning curve.
After I had my daughter, I very much like the stories that you and Kirsty have told. I just thought that I wasn't coping, you know. I really thought there was just something wrong with me, and that I wasn't very good at this mothering thing, you know. And I wasn't very good at dealing with the two-year-old. I was, and I had a baby that slept, you know. But I still felt exhausted all the time. I still felt like I wasn't coping. And eventually, when she was about a year old, I went to the GP about something else. And she said, "And how are you doing?" And I just erupted into tears and just was like, "I'm angry all the time. I can't get off the couch. I'm exhausted. I've got two great kids and I don't know why I'm not enjoying this." And she said, "Well, it sounds like you've got postnatal depression." And at that point I thought, but I felt like this a lot of times in my life, you know. So actually I realised that depression had always been an issue for me, but no one had ever talked about it to me. And I just thought it was normal. I just thought that's how I felt. I was just a defective unit. So from that point on, I got medicated, I went to counselling, and it really has changed my whole life. Being diagnosed with postnatal depression has not just changed my parenting, but changed my whole life.
Mm. So I first realised that I had postnatal depression after visiting my family doctor. I had about a one-year-old child and a sort of three-and-a-half-year-old child, and I had had very low iron during my pregnancy with my second child, partly, in fact, due to the fact that I lost a baby between them and I lost a lot of blood. So that second pregnancy, I was pretty low in everything, and iron and all kinds of things. And so I went to see the doctor and I said, look, I think I've got anemia. You know, I can't get out of bed. I think I must be incredibly low in iron. And, you know, I would sort of get up in the morning and just, you know, if my husband was around, I would just go back to bed for the day. And, you know, this, I could have done this for days on end. And so she suggested to me that I might have depression. And I was really shocked. I was like, no, it's not depression. And, you know, I got her to do a whole lot of blood tests. And even though I was a little bit low in iron, there was nothing really to account for the fact that I felt so incredibly low. And one of the key questions that she asked me was, do you have anything to look forward to? Do you feel like you have anything to look forward to? And I didn't. And I think that that's always stuck in my mind, that depression is perhaps a state of feeling completely hopeless and helpless and like you're trapped. And the situation that I was in, aside from having had sort of three pregnancies back to back and having very low iron and losing a baby and not really having time to recover from it, I was also in a situation where I was very isolated. I was living out in Rocky Bay, so none of my friends would come and visit me because it was too hard for them to come with all their little ones all the way out there. My husband worked in town every day, and we had a sort of almost crippling mortgage, which meant that there was basically very little money for our weekly budget for our food, and very little money for petrol, and certainly no money for any special things like clothes or moisturizers or nights out or anything. So I basically was very isolated and I was very trapped. So the counselor wanted to put me onto doctor wanted to put me onto antidepressants, and I was very against that. I was very opposed to it. I felt that that wasn't something that I wanted to do. So what I got was I got 6 weeks free counselling, which your doctor can give you. And I went to see one of the local counsellors, and after sort of 4 weeks of seeing her, I realised that actually I did need a bit of medical help. And so I started to take some antidepressants. The adjustment period for them was pretty yucky. I felt nauseous a lot, but once they kicked in, I realized that it was like taking the dark glasses off, literally, and I just felt like I was alive again. And so this was quite some time ago. My one-year-old's now 5 years old, so I'm 4 years down the track. My marriage did end up ending 18 months ago, and partly that was due to this financial situation that we got under and the kind of pressures that you have in a relationship with two small children. But one of the things that I wish I'd known then, that I know now, is actually what a huge difference diet and exercise can make to depression. Exercising daily, doing yoga, or even just walking along the beach, or getting out of the house and doing something, even when you don't feel like it, can make you feel so much better. And the other thing is I've gone onto a raw food diet, so, and I actually have a new raw food business as well. So I drink a lot of green juice, and I eat things like smoked snapper and salad, fresh fruit, nuts and seeds. I stay away from carbohydrates and processed food. And I've found that this has meant that I've actually been able to wean myself off the antidepressants in the last 6 months. And so now I am free both of the antidepressants and of the depression. But I'm still having awareness. You know, some days I can have some really difficult days with my children or with my business. And I just have to make sure that I don't have adrenal reaction, which is kind of getting freaked out and getting stressed and feeling panicked. Instead, what I do is just try and take 10 deep breaths and say, look, it's only Waiheke and people have to wait a bit longer today, then that's the way it is. And I've also found that talking openly with lots of other women has made me realise, you know, a number of things. One in four women have miscarriages. I don't know the statistics for depression, but I pretty much say that at least 50% of my female friends suffer from depression from time to time. And yeah, so I feel like at this point, 4 years down the track, I've managed to get through it. But if I ever had another baby, I think I would have much more awareness much sooner of what the signs and symptoms are, and I wouldn't end up so far down the track and in such a bad state.
There is a need for postnatal support, postnatal depression support services everywhere. 15% of women who have a baby are affected by postnatal depression to some degree. If I suspect someone's got postnatal depression, I have two options. I can refer them to their GP, which is a bit of potluck about who they get to see and how they're feeling on the day and how seriously they take the issue. My other option is to refer them to maternal mental health, who are for a long time they wouldn't take referrals from midwives, but they are now. But they're incredibly under-resourced. There's waiting lists, you know, and it means going across to Auckland. For someone who's barely able to get out of bed, that's just too hard.
Mm-hmm.
People, events and issues. Brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Village Butchery, the place to go for bundles of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Island Life. Waiheke people, events and issues. Here on Waiheke Radio every Saturday morning from 10 a.m.
Nathan, I love Waiheke Radio, and it's cool.
And that was my little boy on air. So delightful. He normally calls himself Nathan Patter James, but yeah, he just decided to refer to himself as Nathan. He's very excited about being able to be on air, so I might have to play that sting a little bit later as well, because it's so short and so cute. Anyway, you are listening to Island Life, and thanks to Waiheke TV and Hugh Ross and all the women that participated in that film that you can actually see live on our website, which is, and you know, you may or may not know that I'm founded a charity called Mothers Helpers, and we have a website which is mothershelpers.co.nz. And this week is Postnatal Depression Awareness Week, so I'm just playing some stuff on postnatal depression to make people aware. And yeah, you can view that film again if you'd like to on our website under media releases. One of the women you may have realised was Beetle Treadwell, and she was speaking as a midwife about her opinion as well on what would be helpful for mothers with postnatal depression or at risk of postnatal depression. You're listening to Island Life on Waiheke Radio this morning. Christina Patterson here. And I'm talking about Postnatal Depression Awareness Week this week. And we've been hearing some interviews with some mums who have talked about their experience of postnatal depression. And I was interviewed by David Basham on my experience of postnatal depression and why I set up Mothers Helpers, which is a charity that actually helps mums at risk of postnatal depression. And mums that are at risk are, there are a range of mums that we'll support. So that will be single mums, mums who don't have any support, any family support, if they've experienced depression before, if they have had a traumatic birth, they're struggling with breastfeeding, they've got a baby who's got colic or reflux, or if they've suffered some kind of high stress, such as relationship problems, or bereavement or something like that. So we'll actually support them, and we'll support pregnant mums as well as mums who have a child up to the age of 2 years old. And how we support them is through a coach who we call them peer support workers, who have gone through postnatal depression before, who will monitor them for signs of postnatal depression, but also work towards goals getting them away from the stress or reducing the stress that's in their life. And if they've got postnatal depression, helping them to recover. And the other thing that we do is practical support, like childcare and housework for people who don't have any family on the island. So that's a couple of things that we're doing. And just wanted to talk about Postnatal Depression Awareness Week in terms of what's happening. There's, first of all, you can purchase a Light of Hope candle for a mum suffering from postnatal depression, and a small donation will go to Mother's Helpers for every candle purchased. So if you go on to Trade Me and you put in the search title Light of Hope candle, it should come up with an auction, and they're only $6. The mother who actually, the mother who's making these candles, she actually said this, which is quoted on the auction: "As a mum with PND, you can often feel alone. When I was at the bottom of my postnatal depression, a stranger gave me an unexpected gift. Every time I used it, I would think that even though they didn't know me, they cared. And that's why I developed the Light of Hope candle." So it's 100% natural soy vanilla candle, and it's given to a mum that needs to see someone cares. And a few dollars goes to Mother's Helpers to give essential support to mums in need. The other things that are happening this week, we've got a display which is up at the Waiheke Library with brochures, where to get help, recommended books by the library. On Thursday the 7th of November at 7 p.m. at Onitangi Hall, 3rd Avenue in Onitangi, I'll be presenting a workshop for anyone who knows someone with depression. I'll be talking about what depression is, who's at risk, how they can be best supported and recover, and about recovery from depression. So if you're a health professional, and if you're working in social services, you're a counsellor, if you have friends or family members or that suffer from depression, or you yourself suffer from depression, really encourage you to attend. And on Saturday the 9th of November, we'll be at the Ostend Market. And we've got a survey, actually, that we'll be putting out to mums who, any mum on the island, whether you're pregnant or you've got really young children under the age of 2, we just want to know what your needs are and what's going on for you. And so we've got a survey, and we'd like to collect at least 100 surveys back to understand the needs of Waiheke mothers. And throughout this time, as I mentioned before, we'll be playing the film that I actually played live on air earlier about postnatal depression. It will be going out at Waiheke Cinema prior to all movies showing. So I'm just going to get a couple more interviews lined up here.
Waiheke Radio. Radio.
My name is Nathan. I love Waiheke Radio, and it's cool.
And that is my cool baby. We're just doing Postnatal Depression Awareness Week on Island Life this morning. And I, as I mentioned earlier, went to a perinatal mental health conference recently, and which was fantastic. And one of the people I spoke to was Alka Botha, and she is a psychiatrist from Waitemata Maternal Mental Health. So I'm crossing my fingers right now, because I'm just going to load up the interview that I did with her.
Okay, so I'm speaking to Alka Botha, And Elke, tell me about your background and experience and what you're doing now.
So I'm a clinical psychologist. I've been a clinical psychologist for many years. And the last 7 years I've worked for the Maternal Mental Health Service on the North Shore. And we are part of the What the Matter DHB. We also cover areas like the Rodney area and West Auckland.
Thanks. And we know up to 15% of women experience anxiety or depression during pregnancy or postnatally. Can you tell us how anxiety might affect a woman who is pregnant or a new mother?
Anxiety can have a major impact on a woman's functioning during the pregnancy. When the mother is extremely anxious, it may be hard for her to enjoy the pregnancy or even be aware of the baby's needs. And some mothers may feel very guilty as well, because they know they are supposed to enjoy the journey, but it's just very hard. And the same can happen after the birth of a baby as well. It is a hard period, especially with sleepless nights and with all those hormonal changes taking place. And a mother may end up with a lot of guilt feelings because she may feel she really cares, she wants the best for her child, but she's just not able to do it because of the anxiety.
So how would you describe anxiety?
Anxiety is a really very individual kind of experience, but most mothers would say that they experience physical symptoms, which could include having blurred vision, for instance, or they may have heart palpitations, they may really struggle to breathe, so shallow breathing, the palms may be sweaty, and they may just have this overwhelming feeling of not being able to cope. Some people will say, but it almost feels like having a heart attack or dying. So it's a very overwhelming kind of experience.
And what might be the causes of anxiety?
I wish I could say there's only one cause, but unfortunately there's not. So there may be many factors that play a role. In the first place, there may be a genetic predisposition, meaning that the parents might have had anxiety as well. And then there may be a risk that the children may have a higher likelihood of developing anxiety as well. Other factors that could play a role is negative experiences, maybe trauma. Some mothers will say it could be because of hormonal changes that they are going through. Personally, I think sleep deprivation is probably one of the major contributing factors.
Is anxiety, we have tests for anxiety in pregnancy. Why are our tests in pregnancy very different than it is postnatally? What are the differences that we're seeing in pregnancy versus after baby?
Yeah, interesting enough, the symptoms of anxiety may be very similar for mothers during the pregnancy and postnatally. But I think the symptoms are probably more highlighted after the delivery because of sleep deprivation and maybe breastfeeding and feeding problems with the baby. So there's maybe increased awareness, and I think maybe a high expectation as well that someone may be anxious. But we tend easily to miss it during the pregnancy. And it could be because many of the pregnant moms may not really realize what is actually happening. Sometimes they will just think it's because of hormones or tiredness, so they may not even recognize it themselves. And then it is harder to tell someone else what you really need and to get someone else to understand what you need.
So it may be possible that that mothers, whether pregnant or after baby, identify more with the feeling of anxiety than they might depression. So what are some of the ways in which they can actually overcome their anxiety?
Yeah, we often find that mothers who do have depression struggle with anxiety as well. Mm. And that makes it harder because it's actually both. I think for most mothers it would make sense to try and identify contributing factors. Some mothers will say, hey, but I only sleep on average 2 to 3 hours a night. And if that continues over time, most people would probably end up feeling really anxious. So it's really back to basics, looking at eating, for instance. Often when people are anxious, they feel too anxious to eat, or they may feel nauseous, so that they don't eat properly. And because of that, it could actually add to blood sugar fluctuations, and that could add to anxiety. And another major way to actually start to address anxiety is to have a look at one's thoughts, because it's not always the situation that is actually creating the issue. It's more the way we actually perceive the situation, or we look at the situation. A good example would be when someone loses his or her job, for instance. One person could say, this is the end of the world, we won't be able to cope, I can't do this, I'm a failure. It just really reinforces that I'm not good enough, and that's why this is happening to me. And the other person may be in a similar kind of situation, but then say, yeah, it's not very comfortable to lose my job, it's not really what I wanted, I'm really frustrated about this, or I really feel bad about this. But on the other hand, this could maybe be an opportunity as well. It could maybe be that the one door closes, but that the next door could actually open, and I might just end up finding a better job in the end in any case.
So are there things that people may do that may make their anxiety worse?
Having a lack of support and being afraid to talk about it could make it harder, because then it's a secret. So sometimes just putting it out there in the open could be quite helpful. Sometimes people may end up using coping strategies such as doing a lot of Facebook activities, or using playing mobile phone games or computer games, which could be good coping strategies. But sometimes people tend to invest so much time, and some of those strategies in itself could actually create more stress and anxiety. So yeah, helpful coping strategies, but not using other strategies could actually make it negative to invest too much time doing those activities. And lack of exercise could be an unhelpful strategy, because often when people get anxious, they don't feel like exercising. And meanwhile, it is actually something that could really make a difference. And the same with healthy eating. And often it's about having those small meals on a regular basis, and just to eat what you can actually tolerate.
So we've just come out of a session on anxiety, actually, and that's probably been about an hour and a half, hasn't it? So, you know, hard to put this into a 10-minute interview, but just a couple of things that I'm remembering is, you know, relaxation techniques, breathing techniques, more realistic thinking as opposed to catastrophic type thinking, and distraction, which is what you were talking about earlier with some of your strategies, is really going off to do something else that you enjoy that is made actually achieve distraction for you. So those are some of the things that can relieve anxiety. What was your main advice to someone who perhaps is listening to this, who does experience anxiety and is really struggling with it? What would be your advice to them?
The first point of advice would be, you're not alone. There are definitely other people who experience anxiety as well, and who may find it hard to cope at times. But there is help out there. A good starting point would be to have a discussion maybe with friends or with family members. Next step could be to go to one's GP just to get a professional opinion as well and get some ideas there. Some people may find that it's really helpful to see a counsellor or a psychologist, for instance. And sometimes it may be necessary, especially if the anxiety is ongoing and strategies just don't seem to do the job, then it may be necessary to ask for a referral to a mental health service where they could look at the anxiety more from a holistic viewpoint and have people from different professions involved.
Thanks, Elka, for your time. It's been amazing being part of your conference, and thanks for your time for Waiheke Radio.
Huge pleasure. Thanks.
Hi, and we're back on air now. You're listening to Waiheke Radio and Island Life this morning with Christina Patterson. That was me talking to Elka Botha, who's a clinical psychologist for White Matter DHB, and she was speaking at a perinatal mental health conference recently.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
I've just got one last interview here, and that is with Brendan Smith, and he's with the Father and Child Trust. And they're an amazing service available nationwide, but Brendan Smith is the support worker for the Father and Child Trust in Auckland, and he's a really awesome guy. So any fathers out there that are really needing some support, I'll give you some contact details at the end of the interview. Bear with me because some of the quality of the interview may not be great, but persevere if you can. I think I might be louder than he is, but we'll give it a bash and hopefully you can hear him.
All right, I am at the Perinatal Mental Health Conference and Symposium, and I'm speaking to Brendan Smith, who is from Father and Child Trust. So Brendan, tell us about your experience and background and about the Father and Child Trust.
Oh, well, I became the at-home dad for my kids when they were 2 months and 2 years old. So that sort of made me feel a bit alone at home. And I found a magazine, and it was put together by a bunch of at-home dads from Christchurch. And they were connecting and having a play group, and they supported each other through various issues that were going on, and I realised I had the same issues, and it was just great to me to be able to network on the phone and through email and get a better understanding of what we were all going through.
Okay, and what's your role with how long has it been going, and what's your role with them?
Well, our Father and Child's been in Christchurch for over 16 years and Auckland for about 10 years now, and I've become the support worker. So I pick up the phone, and I might deal with any issues. It might be separating dads or depression. It might be parenting issues. Occasionally we get surprise dads that come in and say, oh, I'm 35 and I had a relationship 4 years ago and I just found out I've got a three-year-old. But we also run a support group. So guys that either can't come in during working hours or that would like to sit in a group of other guys who can share issues, and we aim to strengthen our fathering stuff together. It happens every Wednesday night in Onehunga. And we get dads from all over. It's from Rānui and Albany to Papakura, and I'm not sure about Waiheke, but I'm open to it.
So, and what's the aim of the Father and Child Trust? What's the, I guess, vision?
Our mission is to provide information and support for fathers in their role as a parent. And our vision is a New Zealand where fathers and mothers are supported equally in their role as a parent.
Cool. So, just getting back to my notes here that have flipped over. So what are some of the issues that you're finding with that fathers are facing when they either have a pregnant partner or a new baby?
Well, there's all sorts. Sometimes they're sort of not aware of their role or how to support mum through pregnancy and birth. Sometimes they're not aware of the importance of their role with baby and the fact that right from day one, baby's sort of looking for dad, and he reacts differently when he sees dad, and he probably needs dad's touch to understand his own identity. And in some of those cases, the smell and the hairy and the funny noises that dads make, they give that stimulation to babies that if they never get it, they might not understand men. And so we just help guys that, you know, might not have any idea of why they'd be useful to get a few tips and get in there.
So it's kind of like helping dads to realise how vital their role is by the sounds of things, and the importance that they play in the whole scheme of things.
Yes, and how if they get involved from day one and bond properly for the first year or two, and that involves a lot of cuddling and holding and proper responses to baby, then not only is that child set up for life, but they'll have a much better, more deep and hopefully more invigorated relationship with their child right through the child's life.
And what kind of impact does that have on a child who either does get that or doesn't get that?
Oh, well, you'll have to look at my Why Dad's book to see all of that. There's lots of ways that dads do things different. You know, dads play different, they take risks, they might encourage and challenge their kids. Dads play tricks on kids, and that makes kids think. So, you know, there's lots of ways. There are healthier physical activities that dads encourage. Sometimes it's the fact that the child has to make friends with mum and friends with dad, and it prepares them better for making friends at kindy and at school.
Some of the fathers that you're seeing have probably got a range of issues going on in their own life, I imagine, such as, I don't know, whether violence is an issue or anger is an issue or separation is an issue or even some custody or day-to-day care issues. How do you work through some of those?
Well, we're one at a time.
Yeah.
And yes, we have all those issues at different times, but I guess we're very lucky at Father and Child that most of the dads that come to us are dead keen to be involved with their kids. And there might be some of those barriers that are personal in their life that are getting in the way, or it may be that their barrier is, you know, the mother-in-law or the Sith's lady, and we'll help them work with those people and try to understand what it will take for them to be allowed into their child's life. And quite often the dads will work through that and do everything they can to be there.
So in terms of perinatal mental health or postnatal depression, what issues are you seeing with fathers or who perhaps have a partner who's got postnatal depression? And I suppose a separate question, are you also seeing fathers who are displaying depression that's not being picked up as well?
Yes, well, once again, all of that. The awareness and the understanding of either how to support your partner through pregnancy and birth is just a great start for dads. If they don't get any information about how to be there for their partner, then it's hard to sort of lay any, you know, issues on them once those, you know, complications arise. So obviously we like to try to get dads informed if we get them before baby comes. And then sometimes if there are issues for mum, it might be a traumatic birth, it might be postnatal depression, it might be something more complicated. Then we're quite often helping the dads understand those issues, understand how they can help and whether that help might mean playing with baby or doing more chores around the house. And maybe they're not the one to help mum through those tricky issues. It may be really good if they arrange support for mum, whether it's her family or a therapist.
So two questions here. What some advice just that you might be able to give a father? If I can ask you just a little bit of advice for fathers in general who are expecting a baby or are a new dad, what would your first bit of advice be to them?
Oh, don't hold back. Just get involved. Go to all the midwife visits. Go to all the antenatal classes. Be there at the day of the birth and hold your baby and share and enjoy your baby with your partner and realise that your relationship with the mother of your child and how supportive you are with each other is going to have a massive outcome effect on your child. And the ways that parents cooperate and either share the discipline or the nurturing roles is where the children realise that they are valued by both parents, the children's self-esteem and the children's confidence grows, and they become happy kids.
And to a father who's either got a partner with postnatal depression or they're experiencing depression themselves, is there something else you'd want to say to them?
Yes, well, as well as anything you can do and should do to help mum, it may be that you'd like somebody to talk to, and in most cases you'd rather that be a guy, and either call us or, you know, find a guy that you know that understands those issues and have a chat every now and then. Because there may be stuff that you can learn, and maybe just by sharing that stuff that you can understand it better. And so, you know, be a caring and listening partner, but do look after yourself as well.
So how can people reach you if they want some more information or they want to ask for help? How can fathers reach you?
Yes, our phone's always on. It directs to my mobile if I'm not in the office, and there's usually somebody in the office most weekdays. So you're always welcome to phone, and if not, you can text me and I can phone you back. Or in email. We do have a Facebook page that some guys start on. But we always like to think the best thing to do is talk, and in some cases that's on the phone, in some cases in person, or if you really want, we've got the group sessions on Wednesdays.
Okay, so I guess one final question is for mums. What advice would you give to a mother with regards to dads, to their partner?
Well, you know, I know that some people say that a dad can only be as much of a parent as mum lets him. So please give him a chance. And as long as you encourage and support dad and remind him that as a couple, your balance in this parenting role is just as important as the balance in your romance and the balance in your work life. That each of you have got bits to add and each of you have got things to learn. And the more you do together, the better I'm sure it'll be.
Thanks very much, Brendan.
And you're back on Island Life for the next couple of minutes. I've got Trevor distracting me and being... Not Trevor, sorry. Oh, God, I always do that. Thomas distracting me and being a right pain in the ass.
Evil atheist.
The evil atheist, yes, exactly. So I just wanted to thank all my virtual guests, not actually live in the studio but recorded, particularly the woman who shared their story on the film that's playing at Waiheke Cinema. Don't forget the events that are happening this week for Postnatal Depression Awareness Week. I will be at the market next Saturday. And just for thanks also to Brendan Smith, who spoke to me from the Father and Child Trust, and Alka Botha, psychologist from Waitemata DHB. And just one final thing, I will put up on Facebook some contact details, but most importantly, for any fathers who are wanting some support, who for any issue whatsoever, I encourage you to give Brendan Smith a call on 525 1690. His mobile is 021 892 980, and his email is brendan@fatherandchild.org.nz, but I'll put that up on Facebook as well. You can find it on my Facebook, which is Christina Patterson, or you can find it on Waiheke Community Facebook page.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirowa.